Chris. This is the opening section of our study tonight, and we studied continually the shadows of Jesus Christ. I pointed out before, these are not haphazardly thrown together stories. They're not meaningless stories. They all have a connection, an embedded connection. It's kind of embedded in there to give us a faint, dark shadow of Jesus Christ. And you can see that in a marvelous way in all of the stories of Genesis up to this point, but probably even more so in the story of Joseph. And so I'd like us to investigate that a little. And there's so many here that I probably won't get to them all. And I may even have to cut short what I do have here, and just break it up into two or three different parts. There's so many things about the story of Joseph that connect us to Jesus Christ. So let's begin looking. I had papers, I ran off and forgot them. I'm sorry about that. You want to take notes, you just have to write out the whole sentences this time instead of just a word. The shadow of Jesus in Joseph. Let's look at some of the similarities in this lesson and maybe some more similarities later on. First of all, in the reading that you had just a moment ago, you see the first thing that you notice in verse 2 is that Joseph was 17 years old and he's feeding the flock. Feeding the flock, so he's a shepherd. Jesus is also a shepherd. Jesus is the good shepherd. So lots of shepherds in the Old Testament, and Jesus is the chief shepherd of all the shepherds there are. All of those shepherds were just faint images of the chief shepherd, Jesus Christ. In 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter calls Jesus the chief shepherd. In John chapter 10, Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd." Psalm 23 is one of our favorite passages, but it says, "The Lord is my shepherd." And Jesus took everything that you know about shepherding in the Old Testament and even in the book of Psalms, and everything applies to Jesus as the good one that is represented in all of the Psalms that speak of him as a shepherd. So there is a similarity in that both are shepherds. That may just be coincidental. And so we can throw a lot of things in the area of coincidence. That's not a big deal. Then you start adding on to that, though, the fact that he gave an evil report, verse 2, on his brethren. That is, he told their father about some evil deed that they were doing. Now, some people would look at that and say, well, Joseph is just a spoiled tattletale. And so people look at him negatively. Actually, Joseph should be respected. Telling someone about an evil that is going on is not an evil thing itself. That is, if you can stop somebody from doing evil by telling somebody about it, that is a good thing. Don't let anybody intimidate you and push you away from helping people avoid some evil that they might be wrapped up in. He told on his brethren, his brothers, and that was not a bad thing on his part. It was a good thing. Sometimes, for the ultimate good of somebody, you need to be able to stop them before they do more damage. Suppose you ran into a situation like that. Would you tell somebody? You need to. Sometimes you just need to tell, and Joseph told what he needed to tell. Well, Jesus also tells the truth, and the truth confronts. For example, in John chapter 7 says, "The world cannot hate you, but it hates me, because I testify of it that its works are evil." Jesus told the truth. Telling the truth is cause in some, in evil people's minds to hate the teller. But the telling needs to be done. So both had an evil report on brethren, on Jesus' Jewish brethren in general. Jesus said, they're hating me because I told the truth. That's just another coincidence, right? But then you throw in the fact, verse 3 and 4 says, now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably about him. Well, there is some similarity there as well, in that Jesus says, this is, or God says in, at Jesus' baptism, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased with him. Said that again in Matthew chapter 17, verse 5, at the Mount of Transfiguration. This is my beloved Son. Of all the sons, Jesus stands out. He's the perfect one. In fact, he is the only begotten son. The rest of us are adopted sons. Sort of like Joseph's brothers were not fully the sons of Jacob's love, but Joseph was the favored one. Again, just similarity, but just circumstantial. Or is it? Because when you add to that, they were both hated by their brethren. Joseph was hated by his brothers, and Jesus was hated by his brothers. Turning to John chapter 5 in regard to Jesus, John chapter 5 verse 18 says, therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him. The Jews were his brethren in the flesh, but they sought all the more to kill him, because he not only broke the Sabbath, that is in their mind, not actually, but also said that God was his Father, and that was true, making himself equal with God. Chapter 6 of John goes on to say, record another episode that indicated the hatred of his brethren. Verse 41 of chapter 6 of John says, the Jews then murmured against him because he said, I am the bread of life which came down from heaven. Chapter 10 of John, verse 30 and 31, says, I and my Father are one. And then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. And we've already looked at chapter 7, verse 7, but let's look now at chapter 8 and verse 40. John 8, verse 40. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God. Abraham did not do this. Over and over, Jesus confronted his brethren with sin, told of their sin, and reported their sin. And yet, they hated him for telling the truth. Again, circumstantial similarity is becoming more and more doubtful. It may be one or two points, but then as you mount on top of that, in both cases, they were not believed by their brethren. Look in chapter 37 now, verse of Genesis, verse 5 through 8. Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. And so he said to them, please, hear this dream which I've dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf. Strange dream. But it was designed. God gave him that dream. That was a dream that indicated that he would one day be lifted up above them and they would all bow down to him. They didn't believe what he said. His brother said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" And so they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. In other words, they didn't believe him. They doubted him. Well, is it just a similarity that is just a similarity that the brothers of Jesus didn't believe him as well? Although he spoke of the fact that he had a kingdom that was coming and that he would be put to death and he would be raised again the third day, did they believe him? He was not believed by his brethren. Both of them predicted a future rule over their brethren. In regard to Joseph's brothers, they recognized that in his dream of his sheaf standing upright and theirs bowing down to his, that was an indication that he thought he was going to reign over them one day. In Isaiah 9, verse 6, the prophecy was that a child would be born and the government would be on his shoulders and he would be the one that would reign. And he would be the one who would be the prince of peace. And he would be the one who would govern. Who was this child that was to come? Luke chapter 1 tells us exactly who it was. Luke chapter 1, verse 31. Luke 1:31 says, "And behold, you will conceive in your womb and shall bring forth a son and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end." Isn't it interesting that he says he will reign over the house of Jacob? When Joseph was the one in his own dream that would reign over the house of Jacob. But the writer of Luke wants us to be sure to recognize that this is the one that would absolutely reign over the house of Jacob. And his kingdom would not have an end, whereas Joseph's would. In Matthew chapter 26, Matthew 26, verse 64, Jesus said to them, "It is as you said. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven." An indicator again that Jesus predicted a future rule over his brethren, and others predicted Jesus as well. Then there is also the rejection of that rule was announced. When Jesus was on trial, the Jews said, "We have no king but Caesar." And so they rejected the rule of Jesus Christ. On the day of Pentecost, when the Spirit came upon the apostles and displayed his divine power there, Jesus was seated at the right hand of the throne of God, and the Spirit was telling that Jesus is now both Lord and Christ. Only 3,000 of the Jews that day bowed the knee to Jesus Christ. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul said, one day everybody is going to bow the knee to Jesus Christ. So there was rejection of the rule announced ahead of time, we have no king but Caesar. Other similarities include being envied by his brethren. Verse 11 of chapter 37, his brothers envied him, and his father kept the matter in mind. And you see that also in Jesus, that the words regarding Jesus were kept in heart by Joseph and then also by Mary. And then there were other occasions where Jesus said things and the parents kept them in mind and in heart. The brothers envied him. He left the comfort of his home to do service. In this part, we start with verse 12 of Genesis 37. Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." So he said to him, "Here I am." Then he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me." So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was, wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, "What are you seeking?" Jesus came to seek and save that which was lost. So he said, "I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks." The man said, "They have departed from here, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. He left his comforts and went to do service to his brothers. That's like Jesus. Another similarity. Maybe it's just circumstantial. Maybe it is just happenstance. Or maybe it is a faint image of the shadow of Jesus Christ. Both had conspiracies by their brethren. Verse 18 says, "Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him." Just another similarity? Or does it all come together to show a faint outline, a dark outline, but a faint outline of what was projected to be the life of Jesus Christ? Both of them were stripped. Verse 19 says, "They said to one another, 'Look, this dreamer is coming. Come therefore and let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams.' But Reuben heard it. He delivered him out of their hands and said, 'Let's not kill him.' And Reuben said to them, 'Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father.' So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic." Just another similarity. The fact that Jesus was stripped before his crucifixion and execution. But not only that, it says they stripped him of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. And then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was coming a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh. Another similarity? On their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brothers listened. Then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. Just another similarity. When Judas sold Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. You can keep going and building on these things. And so we keep going now. Chapter 39. We're skipping chapter 38 because that's mainly about Judah and Tamar. We pick up again in chapter 39. In verses 1 through 4. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. And then he made him overseer of his house. Potiphar made Joseph overseer of all of his house. And all that he had, he put in his hand. That is, Potiphar put everything under the hand of the power of Joseph. And so it was from that time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, and that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Joseph was a servant, a slave, and he rose from that position to great power. Jesus suffered as a suffering servant, and then, after his resurrection, was exalted to a position of great power, so that he would say, after his resurrection in Matthew 28, "All power in heaven and on earth has been given unto me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations," because Jesus has all the power. Servants who became highly exalted. Just another happenstance? Or is the story an indicator of an outline of someone that Joseph was only typifying or foreshadowing? Let's go further. Two men are bound beside them. I must interject here how Joseph is going to be put in prison. You remember, as Joseph was taking care of his master's house and Potiphar was away, that Potiphar's wife kept eyeing Joseph, and she cast longing eyes on him. I'd like us to pick up in chapter 39, verse 7. "And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said to his master's wife, 'Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he's committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?' So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that she kept after him, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment and said, 'Lie with me.' But he left his garment in her hand, and he left and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called out to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, 'See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice.' And it happened, when he had heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. And so she kept his garment with her until her master came home. And then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you brought to come to us came in to me to mock me. And so it happened, as I lifted my voice and cried out, and he left his garment with me and fled outside.' And so it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, 'Your servant did to me after this manner,' that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. The keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hands all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever he did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. It came to pass, chapter 40, verse 1, after these things, that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with the two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. And so he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. The place where Joseph was confined now has two by his side. Just circumstantial again, that two men are bound beside him. Or is that similarity a projection of the fact that there would be two bound beside Jesus on crosses? Is it just circumstantial that in the case of one, that one of the prisoners had a dream, and the outcome of his dream was that he would be restored to life, and the other would not be restored to life? Is that just another similarity, or is it an indicator? Is it not an indicator of the truths that we see surrounding Jesus on the cross? I think there's more to it than just circumstantial similarities, but similarities that are couched there by design of God. You remember on the cross, one of the prisoners cried out for Jesus to remember him when he comes into his kingdom. Jesus says, you're going to be with me in paradise this very day. The other one did not find restoration to God. Well, there's other similarities as time gets away from us. Let's go back now to chapter 40 and look at verse 11 through 15. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, the butler was dreaming or telling of his dream, that the Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. I took the grapes, pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said to them, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Another similarity. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler. But remember me. On the cross, the thief said, remember me. But here in the dream here, or the butler is asking Joseph to remember him. Remember me when it is well. Or Joseph is saying, remember me when it's well with you. And please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. Well, when Joseph was eventually remembered, it was because Pharaoh had a dream in chapter 41. Pharaoh had a disturbing dream that involved 7 cows being eaten up by 7 lean cows. 7 stalks of grain being eaten up by 7 lean stalks of grain. He just figured it had some meaning, and he asked people to interpret. No one could interpret his dream. And finally, the chief butler remembered, spoke to Pharaoh in chapter 41, verse 9, said, I remember my faults this day. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each dreamed a dream one night, he and I, Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. And there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. Came to pass just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him. Pharaoh sent and called Joseph and brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved, changed his clothes, came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've dreamed a dream, and there is no one that can interpret it. But I've heard it said that you can understand a dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, said, it's not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream I stood on the bank of the river. Suddenly seven cows came up out of the river looking fine and fat, and they fed in the meadow. And then behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I've never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. When they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning, and so I woke up. Also I saw in my dream, seven heads come up on one stalk, full and good. And then behold, seven heads withered thin and blighted by the east wind sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the seven good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. And Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. That is, they're the same basic meaning. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years, and the dreams are one. The seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty-headed blights by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I've spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. The dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the seven plentiful years. And let him gather all the food of those good years that are coming, and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And then that food shall be as reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine that shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. Well, Pharaoh appointed Joseph to that task and says, you're going to be the master in charge of all of this. Joseph then rose to power, just as his own dream had said to his brothers and his family several years earlier. Joseph was going to then store up the grain in those seven plentiful years, building great vast storehouses. Storehouses that would not only feed Egypt, but other nations who would experience famine would come to Egypt during that time because of the storehouses of plentiful grain in those days of famine. Joseph was going to offer something that the world desperately needed. Well, again, is it just circumstantial? Is it just happenstance that we have all of these similarities stacking up one on top of the other one, and they all reflect on the image of Jesus Christ in some marvelous way. Remember, Jesus says, I am the bread of life. I came down to give you what your souls need. I want you to labor for the food that does not perish, but labor for the food. Don't labor for the food that perishes, but labor for the food that does not perish. And Jesus was going to be the substance of that which the souls of all men everywhere would need. He would open up the storehouses for the souls so that our souls would be satisfied with something great. In a land that is so desperately in need because of spiritual famine in our land, all countries would come to salvation. In chapter 41 and verse 57, so all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain because the famine was severe in the land. Those are, again, stacking on top of one another. Both of them were recognized. I'm going to save that one. I'm going to stop right there because there are just so many more I want to piece together. Just to say this, that as we keep mounting these up, I think that we can see that it is the design of God. It is the wisdom of God couching in this a faint image of Jesus Christ. And that gives us great reason to believe that the Bible is not just a collection of disconnected stories, but stories that have a purpose of connecting our minds to the one that was foreshadowed in all of these things. Well, that ought to give us, a sense of awe at the wisdom of God's Word and to be able to say within ourselves, I know the Bible wasn't written by human wisdom alone. It was pieced together with a purpose that only a divine mind could guide. And so he guided these men to write these stories so that we could see the faint image of Jesus ahead of time. If you're here this evening, never obeyed the gospel of Jesus, we want to give you that opportunity. If you believe that Jesus is the Christ, if you repent of sins, confess your faith in him, and be baptized for the remission of your sins, he'll add you to his church, and you can become a new creature in him. And if we can help you do that this evening, don't delay. If you've done that and you fall and need to correct things in the public way, and we can help you with that, please come now as we stand together and sing this song.